From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. In the last 30 years or so, hip-hop culture has grown and matured. The music has changed the way we all think about pop culture and popular speech. More than ever, hip-hop artists are speaking up and speaking out. But are the right messages being heard? Many artists and critics think hip-hop has gotten a bad rap. Yesterday, North Carolina Central University and Atlantic Records put on a hip-hop summit hosted by hip-hop artist Ninth Wonder. The focus of the summit was to assess the state of hip-hop in the African-American community. So, what is the state of hip-hop today? Is the hip-hop message and the message in the music, is it the music of America's youth? Joining us in the studio now, our Ninth Wonder of the group Little Brother. Ninth, welcome back to the program.
How you doing?
Good. Good to see you again. And Mark Anthony Neal, welcome back, Associate Professor of Black Pop Culture at Duke University. Welcome back to you as well.
How you doing, Frank? Great to be back.
Couldn't be better. We're welcoming your calls this hour at 877-962-9862 as we assess the state of hip-hop on the state of things. Ninth Wonder, you have said that hip-hop artists have a responsibility for the message they send. Why?
Because we live in a state of, a time where young people, they look to rappers as role models. It used to be a time, you know, when I was coming up, it used to be a time where I had basketball players and football players on posters on my wall, and, you know, I looked up to those guys and things like that. But now it's a situation where you got kids that, you know, especially the black kids, they don't want to play sports anymore, you know. I grew up in a time where we had A Different World on TV, Cosby Show, showing me a more positive side, and it was all the Spike Lee movies, you know, School Days and all of that, showing me a more positive side of things. But now, it's nothing for a black kid usually to look up to as far as being positive, and the first thing they see is BET. And what's on BET? Rappers. And, you know, what are those rappers doing? Well, they're doing a number of things. So that's where the whole, you know, role model thing comes into. So we have a responsibility. Is it fair that we say that we are role models? No, it's not fair. But what comes, you know, when you have, I don't actually know the saying, but I know what I'm trying to say. When you actually and the spotlight is on you, you have a responsibility.
Okay, well, but that's the role of the preacher, not an industry. The music is a business, isn't it?
Right. It is a business. It's big business, especially from the growth of hip hop shows that over time. And this comes with any form of art. When money gets involved, it becomes a big business. And a lot of purists may believe that, you know, they're making a lot of money, but it's not. It's ruining the culture. Mm. But at the same time, the people making money is not complaining.
Little Brother's latest LP is called The Minstrel Show.
Right.
That's the latest album. What's the message in that album?
The message, there's several messages. And I think if you speak to all three of us, we all have a different one, but it all comes to the same. The message that I try to portray to kids is basically don't wear a mask, be yourself. Don't, you know, put on a mask and, you know, dance around and, you know, and do whatever. You can be yourself. You don't have to follow anybody or follow behind anybody. And, you know, we kind of took the whole minstrel show attitude and the minstrel show, you know, the history of it, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, and try to put that together. On top of that,
you brought that with us. Let's hear a clip now from Minstrel Show, Little Brother.
Trying to man up, see what's really good with you. Gentlemen's approach, not bringing hood to you. Same things that you hear every day, like, hey, ma, hey, boo, baby, what's your name? Please pull up a seat, I'm so glad you came. My mother called me Thomas, you can do the same. Damn, it's so refreshing when you calling out my name. Been poof for so long, it doesn't sound the same. My occupation rapping, I make a little change. I see you not impressed with what this life brings. Finish school, got a job, girl, do your thing. It's a lot of independent women wanna be claimed. Marrying the money, you're marrying the fame. Or at least give birth to a check. With all due respect, let's two-step in the name of life. Who says we gotta do the waltz all day and all night? It's like,
if love is not enough, we don't have to rush. Come around, I'll slow it down just for you. Lady, you should be right here next to me. Come around, I'll slow it down just for you.
Slow It Down by Little Brother from their latest album called Minstrel Show. Mark Anthony Neal, this is a song that we just heard about a relationship, about men struggling to figure out a real relationship with a woman and how that works. Puts light to some of the ideas we have about what rap music is.
Well, I think Ninth's point is incredible. You know, what happens when we get to a point where, and we've talked about this before, Frank, where young men are comfortable being in the skin that they're in and being able to represent who they are and be comfortable with that. And, you know, rap music, if there's a problem with the rap music that we see, let's say the 50 Cent, and it's not the problem that there's anything inherently wrong with 50 Cent. The problem is we don't see a balance of other experiences. 50 Cent would be okay if we actually saw songs and videos where men were talking about, you know, I'm trying to be a better father because my father wasn't a great father. Or they're talking about, you know, why can't we just sit down and have a conversation about having a relationship and not get caught up in all the drama? Just everyday regular things that all these kids that are consuming hip-hop are going through, but hip-hop doesn't reflect in terms of the content, at least the mainstream hip-hop, in terms of the content that you don't see these everyday realities.
Ninth, is this a dangerous thing for you to do? Did you feel like you were going to be perhaps criticized and maybe not successful if you exposed this kind of vulnerability that we hear in that song?
I mean, obviously, anytime you don't take the short road on anything is always, you know, it's going to be a problem. And we knew going into it, naming your album The Minstrel Show would have to accompany, we all, you know, I'm a history major. So we all went out and, you know, did our research on it. And we even put a blurb inside our album credits, although, you know, people don't like to read, we put it in there, you know, saying this is what's going on, this is what it's all about. So I wish us naming our album The Minstrel Show would make less noise than somebody naming the album Get Rich or Die Trying. Mm-hmm. Like I said, no diss to 50 Cent at all. You know, I like some of his music. I mean, people like to dance, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a time and place for everything, and I don't think certain things that come on the radio, you should hear 2 o'clock in the afternoon when kids are getting off the bus.
We're talking about social consciousness and hip-hop music. I'm Frank Stachel. This is The State of Things. My guests are Ninth Wonder from the group Little Brother and Mark Anthony Neal from Duke University. And Mark Anthony Neal, you know, we talked about the message. The idea that you would call an album The Minstrel Show evokes a kind of history. The fact that we're not talking about the latest model car or the latest fashions is a suggestion that you're going to have to know something about history to know what's in this album.
I mean, when you go back and you think about the artistry of the great comedian Burt Williams, and when you look at folks later amongst those folks doing the minstrel stage and these kind of Sambo itches, Lincoln Perry. Mel Watkins has a great new book on Lincoln Perry, who we know as Step and Fetch It. I mean, this is important history because these were people, many of which, in the case of Burt Williams, he have a black man who was forced to paint up his face to come off as more authentic to white audiences. And there's this whole history of folks painting up and dressing up black, if you will, to play to the kind of desires that white America wanted to consume. And at least in the case of a Burt Williams or a Lincoln Perry, I mean, this was an era, Hattie McDaniel, you know, her blackface was the maid suit that she had to wear. I mean, for these folks, they didn't have many choices, right? And at least we can see it someone like Lincoln Perry, where he took his fame and tried to translate it into some sort of very real wealth. And when he could, to devote some of that money towards whatever concerns he had that, you know, were of interest to black America. It raises questions now, you know, in 2006 about why some artists, and not just hip-hop, feel the need to blacken up still. And, you know, in some ways, I often refer to hip-hop as you know, sonic blackface minstrelsy. You don't have to paint up your face, but if you wear the right kind of clothes and move the right kind of way, it has the same kind of impact. And I know folks get upset because, you know, minstrels themselves, I mean, that's not a pejorative term, right? Minstrels were performers. But what we're really talking about is this kind of mode of blackface minstrelsy, where you're literally playing to the desires of both white America and a whole range of folks, including some black Americans, on what is authentic blackness and what's authentic black culture.
How much do you think the origins of hip-hop, especially when we get into, the, as you say, the clothes and some of the gestures that do play to the stereotype, how much of that was in order to pass and be successful in white culture, and how much of it was to diffuse the pain of the stereotype?
Well, see, I don't know if that was the case initially. I mean, you know, Ninth made a great point. You know, folks like to dance. In those early days when the Beastie Boys, you know, first came out with their album and sold 5 million copies, I mean, this was the album that you would hear at the white frat party, you know, as they're standing around the keg. And I think the initial appeal to hip-hop was that it's something that you could play at a party and have a good time. Even today, you know, so much of 50 Cent's success it's not about kids who are into hip hop or they're into 50 Cent per se, but they heard a hot track in the club one time and just bought the CD so they could hear that hot track in the car and on an MP3 all the time.
When we talk about the maturity of this industry, Ninth, how much do you think the history of this industry and the fact that it has grown more diverse, more widespread in its appeal, given you license to branch out a little bit, to be a little more thoughtful than you might have been 10, 20 years ago, got into this business?
Well, like I said, as far as the money that's been pumped into hip-hop, it's more widespread now. When we go overseas, when you get to a point when you go to Scandinavia, you go to Sweden, Finland, and Norway, and you have we're walking down the street, and it's, a Swedish kid looking at me with a big fitted hat on. He's looking at me hard, and I'm looking at him like, why are you looking at me like that? You know, it's like, that's when you know. I talked to Mos Def, who's also an artist. I talked to him, and he said, you know, the biggest thing, the biggest export of America is cultural data. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a situation of, that's all they know us as. Mm-hmm. So we're not just in the Bronx with Kool Herc in 1974 anymore.
Right.
We are everywhere.
It's worldwide. And I want
it's
to talk
worldwide.
More about how that has happened and why this culture has spread so far and why it is so popular around the world as we continue our conversation on the state of things about the hip-hop message and take your calls at 877-962-9862. More of your calls just ahead and more with Ninth Wonder and Mark Anthony Neal of Duke University. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. We are talking today about hip-hop as the message music of America's youth and the world's youth, for that matter. What is the message in hip-hop? Is it being lost in the materialistic sensational lyrics of mainstream hip-hop? How has it advanced and evolved? We're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. And with us in the studio, our Ninth Wonder, artist and member of the group Little Brother from right down here in North Carolina, and Mark Anthony Neal, associate professor of black pop culture at Duke University. So just before the break, we're talking about the worldwide appeal of hip-hop culture in general, the music in particular. Let me put a question to you, Mark Anthony Neal. We talked about this beginning as kind of dance music. It's fun to listen to. Has it become message music? Is it just popular as dance music abroad, or is this now a message music as well?
I think any artistic form is going to have both ends. Music that's just simply consumed for leisure and music that tries to take on larger social issues. You know, once Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five did the message and tried to give some sort of language towards inner city life, back in 1982, it created a context in which that could happen. And you know, you think of a group like Run DMC, which we don't think of as serious, but when you listen to their song, it's like that. I mean, it was playing off of that same kind of riff. And I think the artists themselves are comfortable with the fact that they're complex enough that they can do both, that they can do a range of things, right? You know, LL can make a love song, but at the same time prove how good he is as a rap artist. There's a range of stuff that hip-hop can do, so it can be serious and it can be also seen as music just to party to.
Has that comfort level evolved over time? Has that changed? Are things more comfortable now for artists now, or can they be more comfortable today than they were 20 years ago?
Well, I think the industry is less comfortable with that now. And let me explain what I mean. I think if you go back to 1989 and think when Public Enemy and De La Soul, and you had a range of groups, you could be whoever you wanted to be in hip-hop and still be hip-hop. Now we have to put, you know, rappers who don't fit into the context of what we think is real hip hop, we have to separate them and call them conscious rappers or Dirty South rappers. You know, 20 years ago, you could just be a rapper. You could just be hip hop and represent however you need to represent. Now, because there's so much pressure on marketing, what's perceived as the most marketable aspect of hip hop, if you don't fit into that little box, right, then they have to find a whole other space to kind of push you out there. I mean, that's why I appreciate Kanye West, because Kanye West is actually making a suggestion here that we can broaden the space of what hip-hop is. And you listen to his music, he got some stuff with the knuckleheads, he got some stuff for folks who are conscious, he got some folks who are church. You know, he's doing a range of things there, and we have to get back to where we can allow hip-hop to have a broader appeal to a wide range of folks.
Ninth, when you go overseas, when you go abroad, you talked about being in Sweden and Norway, places like that. Are there expectations about the kind of music you're going to do? Do you have to do? Are they expecting gangster rap? And if you don't do that, they're disappointed? Or is there a broader mindset abroad as well?
Not the cast at the shows, you know, cast at shows that come to see us and they know exactly who we are. It's just the people on the street, you know. And I mean, it's not even, you know, I use, Scandinavian as an example, but it's like that in Durham. I mean, you know, walk down the street, you know, it's like, you know, Even speaking to my own people, black people, it's like, you know, what do? I'm at PTA meetings. I'm a 31-year-old man. I'm at PTA meetings with my daughter and everything, and, you know, and they ask, well, what do? And I'm like, I'm a hip-hop producer. And they're like, what? You know, they look at me like, I'm like, yeah, but that just comes for an example. That's all they see on TV. And like, oh, well, you must do that. Like, no, I don't. You know, I do another brand. I do music. I do soul music. But trying to explain that to a person that's not really, you know, versed in hip hop culture like that, it's like.
But there are people, certainly, as you suggested, Kanye West, for instance, is somebody who really has broad appeal and has had a breadth of artistic expression. Let's listen to The Diamonds of Sierra Leone, Kanye West.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me. Diamonds are forever.
Throw your diamonds in the sky if you feel the vibe. The rock is still alive every time I rhyme. Forever, ever, forever, ever, 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 ever. Good morning, this ain't Vietnam still. People lose hands, legs, arms for real. Little was known of Sierra Leone and how we connect to the diamonds we own. When I speak of diamonds in a song, I ain't talking about the ones to be glown. I'm talking about Rockefeller, my home, my chain. These in conflict diamonds. Is they Jacob? Don't lie to me, man. See a part of me saying, keep shining. How? When I know where the blood diamonds. Though it's thousands of miles away, Sierra Leone connect to what we go through today. Over here, it's the drug trade. We die from drugs. Over there, they die from what we buy from drugs. The diamonds, the chains, the braces, the charms is. I thought my Jesus piece was so harmless. Till I seen a picture of a shorty armless. And here's the conflict. It's in a black person's soul to rock that gold. Spend your whole life trying to get that ice. On a polo rugby, you look so nice. How can something so wrong make me feel so right? Right? Before I beat myself up like Ike. You can still throw your Rockefeller diamond tonight. Because throw your diamonds in the sky if you feel the vibe.
Take that, 50 Cent. There is a conscious call to consider what consumerism is all about by a very, very successful rapper.
Yes,
it is. The thing that Kanye West benefited from, and I've known Kanye ever since he came down here in June 2003, when we walked around Durham, and people were like, who are you, and why do you have on a Rockefeller chain? So, you know, with the success of Kanye West, he had to do it by himself. That's the thing that, you know, it was saying is like, when they want to put you in a box, they want to put you in a conscious box, record labels don't believe you can sell. But if you do it on your own, and a lot of videos Kanye paid for out of his own pocket and, you know, the production money he's had, you know, he put it out there that I can be myself. And he shows everybody that the reason why he can have something for the knuckleheads and he talk about church, because he's human. No human is one way 24 hours a day. People like to dance, people like to eat, people laugh, cry. And he's the only artist that's in mainstream America right now that's showing all of that.
And he's succeeding. Why isn't the industry picking up on this? Why aren't there more artists?
Because they think that it was timing. It can only be one Kanye West. It's luck. Mm. People don't want to hear this. And they kind of separate us from Kanye. Yeah, you're a backpack, but Kanye is a pop star.
Yeah.
But we're basically talking about the same things on our records. We're talking about life as a young black progressive male in America.
And people are listening. Let's go to the phones. Eric is on the line from Chapel Hill. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, good.
I have a question for Ninth. I was wondering, who do you think the blame should be more placed on when you see mainstream have the violent topics or the cash money kind of conversations? Do you think it should be on the rappers who are talking about it, or the people at the labels who are making these types popular and whatnot?
The blood is on everybody's hands, man. Everybody.
Yeah,
from the consumer. If the consumer made up his mind to stop going to the store and buying it, people would stop making it. pretty much.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two is on the record label. The record label thinks that if one person comes out, everybody thinks that, okay, we got to do this now. It's a carbon copy of everything. And at the same time, it's an artist. Nobody holds a gun to our heads in the studio that says, okay, disgrace your race right now. Mm. Nobody says that. We do it on our own. So the blood is on everybody's hands, man.
Eric, thank you for your call. And it also suggests that in a song like that, where Kanye West is in a business where consumption is an important part of his living, and he's telling everybody that you've got to think about where your dollar goes. You're voting with that dollar. You're creating a world with that dollar.
I think the whole idea of holding everybody accountable is critical because, you know, even as we say to the rappers, we want something much more responsible. If you're not going to support them and buy records when they do something else, it's one thing to say we don't like what you're doing, but when they give you something that's much more quote-unquote positive, you can't download it, right? You got to buy it. And the other thing is, like, I think we have to be real about holding the folks that we don't see accountable, right? In this case, it's the record companies, but it's also commercial radio. If 50 Cent wants to, if the Ying Yang Twins, right, if they want to make a song called The Whisper Song, which is great aesthetically, I have no problem hearing that on the radio. And Knight talked about this earlier, 10 o'clock at night. Right? Rappers don't control when their music gets paid on the radio. They may control that it does get paid, at least the record labels do, but they don't control when it gets played. And there has to be some sort of relationship with commercial radio. These are public airwaves, right? We give you the right to play what you want to play, right? But it has to be done at a time that's mature, right? Where you're going to have mature audiences listening to what's being played. And my kids aren't in the minivan, you know, singing the Whisper Song at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. You also have to, to what extent are you fighting sort of perceptions that you just can't beat? I mean, if there could be 30 of those songs and we could hear that song 30 times and then we hear one, you know, 50 Cent, we say, oh yeah, that's rap music, because that's our expectation if we're not really into the culture ourselves.
It's not only that. It's a situation when it's a sign of the times, man. It's like, you know, in the beginning of hip hop and through the late 80s, early 90s, we only had three media outlets, radio, TV, you know, video, you know, TV, video, and CDs and tapes. Now it's a situation where it's those four mediums plus iTunes, downloads, iPods. You can zap an album to somebody on a YouSendIt file just like that. You know what I'm saying? So we're kind of fighting a losing battle when it comes to trying to, you know, I have daughters, and I'm fighting a losing battle sometimes. I'm not with my five-year-old 8 hours of the day, and now you have a situation where you got high schools and middle schools. You can bring iPods and see, and you have computers in every room, and you know what's on the internet. So it's like, it's the parents who most of the time is revered at, okay, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, come on, 50 Cent is the man compared to all the friends, all the peer pressure, plus all the stuff that's being, it's like sensory overload, man.
But isn't there an upside to the internet as well in that you can self-produce and self-publish and get a message out there and bypass the industry?
It's a gift and a curse.
Yeah. 877-962-9862, the number to call if you want to join our conversation about the hip-hop industry. Shane is on the line from Durham. Hi, Shane.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
This is Shane, also Mecca-centric. You guys have really been addressing my question as far as I do positive music, and it's taken me about 20 years to get there. I'm from Mississippi, transplant here, but that you've been addressing the question, how do you get it? If you're doing something positive, you're doing something that's going to nurture people, soul, you're talking about the solution to the problem, how do you get that out there? And I'm not going to plug my website, but I'd like to pass my information on tonight. So okay. You guys have been answering it, though, but I want to get with you guys sometime.
Got it.
Thanks for the call. Is there a danger, too? I want to get back to Ninth, your latest album, Little Brother's latest album, The Minstrel Show. Let's hear a clip from that right now. It's a clip called Loving It, and we're going to talk a little bit about using the history, using the image of the minstrel show very consciously, very self-consciously, and I want to talk a little bit about the possibility of confusing those images. Let's hear it.
And we get it started up one more time.
Down, it's here in front of me.
I got the number down right here, I'm looking at it. I couldn't believe she would do me like that, B.
I
just don't understand it, dog.
I
can't understand it.
Oh!
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome y'all back to the Minstrel Show. Thank y'all for tuning in. Y'all can be watching a lot of other states, but y'all tuning us right now. And it feels so beautiful. Performing in blackface tonight. Joe Scudder, he's coming up a little bit later on in the show. I just want to thank y'all for just tuning in. It's like this, y'all. Yo, when
say pull his verses out. Promoters pull their purses out. That money for a purchase out. That charge card that they swipe for the worst amounts. Cause this is business, not personnel. Thought that I would switch my personnel. Like Big Doe and Big Pooh would be the first to bounce. But y'all, this is boring me. I'm never gonna change up. Please join a sorority. Go step your game up. Y'all boys ain't ready for damage. You need extra planning. You in the game, but you offsides and got an extra man. And I'm the coach doing your reprimanding. I got a team to run, boy. Respect my family. And when I'm on the mic, y'all should expect the grandest show of lyricism ever. Let them know who your man is.
Can't stop, can't stop, yes,
so gutter.
Can't stop,
little brother.
Can't stop,
and all across the world, the fly ladies and girls tell me they're loving it.
Loving it, Little Brother, from their latest album called The Minstrel Show. So, Ninth Wonder, you're evoking an image there, and you're talking very clearly about the historical, putting it in a historical context. Is there a danger that you end up, you know, some people don't get the joke? They don't get the...
There is a big danger in that. A friend of mine, I was also in the industry, Bun B, Underground Kings, said something to us about, and he's, if you listen to his music is totally juxtaposed from ours. But he made a good point. He was like, I understand it, but some people might not. And that's the risk that, you know, we take. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather somebody take that risk than somebody taking the risk of, okay, I shot 50 people on my record. Should you go do it, little boy, or shouldn't you? You know what I'm saying? I'd rather take that particular risk, you know.
Mark Anthony Neal, now we're talking a lot more about the history of hip-hop in general. You're talking about evoking historical images. What does that say about this industry? Are we getting too grown up? Is it too adult now that we're talking about it in a serious way?
I think it was only obvious. I mean, we're talking now 30 years, you know, 35 years. Hip-hop is going to grow up. And you know, we have this conversation about the generational divide, and we not obviously think, well, it's hip-hop against the civil rights. It's a generational divide within the hip-hop generation now. Mm-hmm. You know, Ninth, you talk about grown man, 31. I'm 40 years old. You know, Chuck D, 45.
Yeah, 40.
And we're thinking about hip-hop very differently, you know, than kids who are 17. I'm wondering how hip-hop's going to help me parent. Right, I'm gonna wondering how hip hop's gonna help me talk about things like paying a mortgage and who to vote for and those kind of issues and I think it's just the process of hip hop growing up at this point in time. Right, and I'm not sure the industry is ready for that component yet.
They are not.
They're not as adult as the rest of us. Talking about the social consciousness in hip hop music with Durham-based musician Ninth Wonder and Duke professor Mark Anthony Neal. I'm Frank Stacio, and this is the State of Things. Ninth, what about the idea of the hip-hop summit? How does that play into all of this that we're talking about, sort of bringing people into this different consciousness?
It's a level of education as far as for the professors of North Carolina Central to see, for the kids to see another light, because the only thing they see is, okay, my city, BET, my city, BET. They need to see something in between, how it affects them as far as exploitation of women and things like that. They need to see another side, because everything, I was talking earlier, everything stops. You know, most institutions, everything stops in 1974. There is no black history. It seems like this happened after Vietnam. It's like, what are we going to start talking about? We at least need to start talking about from 1975 to the year that the notorious B.I.G. was killed. It's a lot of stuff that happened in between that, and we need to start focusing on that, or the kids are going to be lost.
What do you think about hip-hop summits in general, Mark Anthony Neal? Are they having the effect that Ninth is talking about?
You know, when Russell Simmons did his huge summits, I was suspicious. Because if the idea is to empower artists, I'm really concerned about if you're bringing record label execs in the conversation, as if somehow they're going to be giving something back to these artists. Yeah. But I think when they're done locally, right, with the idea of how do you empower folks on a local level to talk about these things and find ways in which they can empower themselves, you know, hip-hop has a wide breadth. I mean, we always think about, you know, kids want to get into hip-hop simply because they want to make music. But, you know, they could get into video directing. They could get into marketing and promotion. I mean, there's so many things that hip-hop has its tentacles into, right? I'm a hip-hop scholar, right? If you're into hip-hop and you want to go get a PhD and write books on hip-hop, you can do that now. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of things that we can use hip-hop on in these summits to talk about how hip-hop can empower folks in a wide range of ways.
Do you think that's happening, Ninth? Who comes to the summits, and what are they expecting when they come?
Students come to summits.
I mean, are they expecting just to hear a lot about the music and see stars and kind of be a star, or what do you think is the largest expectation?
I think they're expecting to see something new, because it's like there isn't a sense of urgency with young black people anymore, it seems like. And it's something new and it's something different. All kids like something different. Whether the media or radio or the industry feels like they don't, they want to be programmed with the same garbage over and over. They like to see stuff different. And it may be a chance to talk to a Ninth Wonder or a Fonte or a Big Pooh. But at the same time, they get to see another side of us saying, okay, I'm just like you, and why can't I do what you're doing, or why can't I do what Sharice Malachi is doing, or be an A&R, or do something else, or why do I not like this video? Or sometimes we don't ask kids anything, yeah, and they get a chance to voice their opinion.
And is the idea to also, I guess, to gather folks in the same room, and then if there's a political message, that doesn't have to come out of the summit, but everybody's now united, at least.
Right.
They came for the music. They may have left for the vote or something along those lines.
Right.
Do you see much of that happening? Do folks have kind of a different idea about where they can be in hip-hop after they've been to the summit?
I would hope that most kids, the younger generation, will go home, and the next time they turn on their favorite video channel, they'll start looking at it with a skew eye, like, you know, this is really poisoning my brain, some of this stuff. You know, then the reality is, you know, like, you know, with most cases, everybody likes to get there to have a rally, this and that, and then they go home and get back into their comfortable spaces, and then it's like, okay, the fight is over, I'm back home. All right, let's turn it
yeah.
on. You know?
Talking about the messages in hip-hop music, responsibility, and rap with us in the studio, hip-hop artist Ninth Wonder and Duke University Assistant Professor Mark Anthony Neal. Just ahead, more of your calls at 877-962-9862. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, talking this hour about hip-hop as modern-day message music. Is hip-hop the political speech of America's youth? And why has hip-hop taken hold of mainstream culture? Where is it headed next? With me in the studio, Ninth Wonder of the group Little Brother, and Mark Anthony Neal, Associate Professor of Black Pop Culture at Duke University. You're on the show as well at 877-962-9862. So if you saw the Grammys last night, there's Jay-Z in a John Lennon T-shirt. He's produced the Black Album. He gets on with Linkin Park and does fusion music. Paul McCartney gets up, sings a song, then evokes the White Album when he says, you know, hope we pass the audition. And we hear this kind of fusion with rock. And then the images of mostly white rock stars, then Coretta Scott King and peace signs. And I'm wondering if the ghost of Berry Gordy has descended on hip-hop and the industry has figured out a way to make money in fusion. Is there something happening there that certainly there's an artistic impulse toward fusion, I think, that you'd probably admit to right away, but whether or not the business side of that is caught up.
I bet you last night it was a bunch of record labels there scratching their heads like, like, wow, you know. I think so. I think we need it. I pray to God we get it, you know. It's last night definitely... everybody on stage together, that was the way of educating. You know what I'm saying? That would make me sit home with my nephews, and they see Jay-Z, and I see Paul McCartney, and they're saying Black Album, and I'm saying Abbey Road. You know, it's like, and I can explain to them, you know, that's the way to kind of bring things together, I think.
Good. Is it a real impulse out there, or was this just a show? I mean, you know, the Grammys is about the business, but, I mean, is there something really happening out there in terms of the music and some kind of... you know, sort of coming together.
I think you give the Grammys credit because they've always tried recently to push the boundaries, whether it's Eminem and Elton John or Prince and Beyonce Knowles a few years ago. I think they're sincere in what they're trying to bring about there, because I think part of their concern is that, you know, if we're going to give awards to music, can we at least represent quality music? And when you got all these folks in the room, you know, it's the We Are the World lesson. You know, what happens when you got all these folks in the room who are musicians? There are lots of things that can come out of that. You know, some of it may not be raising money for famine in Africa, but some of it can just make some really good music.
And is that happening in terms of the message? Is it becoming more message music? In other words, more overtly political, more than just becoming the emblem of an age and bringing people together around the music. Is the message now an important part of the music?
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah, it is. It really is. You were speaking earlier about how does certain music touch certain parts of your life. It was because of Public Enemy. That's why I went to school. I was raised by my mother and father, two Southern Black Christian people. And, you know, my dad used to say, learn a trade, learn a trade. My mom was a teacher, but at the same time, it was because Public Enemy said, Marcus Garvey, Huey Newton, and all this on his record made me want to go pick up Autobiography of Malcolm X is a message, and it still is a message.
Let's go to the phones. Leroy's on the line from Raleigh. Hello, Leroy.
Hello there. I have quite a bit I want to get in, but I'll be brief, and I'll just jump right to the point. In my opinion, quite frankly, and I think I speak for the majority of young black men and women who I'm left with the task of cleaning up the mess that I think a lot of hip-hop and rap have dealt on us. To me, it's just like music from hell. Because, you're dealing with the bling, you're calling each other dogs. In the 60s, there was a clear message because young black and girls and boys knew who they were, had a sense of purpose, and you could read between the lines and even the sheets, and the little kids would never even realize what you were talking about. And there was a social message there. And now you have all you could do is just look at the record and look at what effect it's having on our young black youth. With the baggy pants, with the thug look. Now there was a time when you could really distinguish between young black men on a college campus and the guys in the street. Now it's a blend. Benjamin Chavis was on your program, I think, last week, was talking about Eminem, and 50 Cent was carrying on the legacy of Dr. King. How absurd can that be when you're talking about I've got so much to say, but don't cut me.
Well, I tell you what. Why don't we do this? You said plenty, and we appreciate your phone call. Let's get a response. Thank you, Leroy.
Well, as far as being a music from hell, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, but I do agree that on TV there is a lot of negative images, and like we were saying earlier, there are artists out there that are trying to do better and trying to do differently. It's just up to us to support those. And I think they might not be seen on TV every day, on every magazine, but it doesn't mean they don't exist. And this is the nature of the industry and the business. And like I said before, even back in the 80s, we had Public Enemy. And when Public Enemy spoke about reading books and knowing your black history and look what they're doing to us, Virginia, and in Virginia Beach on July 4th one year, mm-hmm. where brothers gonna work it out. Mm-hmm. See, Dolores Tucker said they were hell music. Mm-hmm. So there are don't get fed in what you see on TV. Look past TV. Look past magazines. It may take you to go to a store and look and just flip through the rap section and see three brothers trying to do something better and trying to tell your kids to go to school and mm-hmm. become all you can be. Rap is not all just bad music like that.
It does strike me, though, that at the heart of Leroy's question is also the fact that the impact, not only on the perception of people from the outside who aren't maybe paying attention to rap, but they're not into the culture, but his sense is, all right, there may be some good stuff out there. There may be a lot of good stuff out there, but it's the bad stuff that seems to be taking hold among the most vulnerable population, and he is in a position to have to try to deal
with it. And I agree with that. I mean, this is bad stuff sells. And look at reality TV. Nobody's going to watch a reality show when somebody doesn't fight. If it's not a fight on it, it's a situation of, this is a boring show. Let me turn into making it a band where they're fighting right now. I mean, right. It's the nature of making money.
I think we also have to be careful. I think one of the things that older guard of black America hates about hip-hop is that hip-hop airs black America's dirty laundry. And it's all out in the public. And my thing is that, hip hop isn't uniquely vulgar in the history of black expression, right? And I always use the example. Jelly Roll Morton has a song called "Go Get Me a Palette," And if you see the lyrics to this song, it's like this is a song that could not get played even at 10 o'clock at night on some radio station.
Clarence Carter,
right? Clarence Carter, right? Stroking, right? So this stuff isn't new. The difference is that our access to it because of technology and corporate entities makes it much more different. And I think it's always this educational process. Yeah, I understand you hate this stuff, but the stuff that is most visible to you is the most. The mm-hmm. stuff is not the majority of what's being produced. Ernie Panicoli, who's a photographer of hip-hop artists, he describes rap music as the bastard child of hip-hop. And what he was trying to make the point is that, hip-hop has these four or five elements.
Yeah.
And we continue to talk about bad music as mm-hmm. opposed to the good music that's being made or what's happening around DJing and breakdancing and graffiti art and now intellectual production. There are 150 courses in the United States now offered at major universities on hip hop. It's not just about a bunch of knuckleheads. And my last thing is that, my feeling is that some of these cats were going to be knuckleheads anyway. right? Why are we having hip-hop take responsibility for folks who are just dysfunctional in the first place? You know, they could have been training on the PGA Tour and would still be knuckleheads.
But it does raise another question. If there is so much, and you're right, the so much good music being produced, so much music that I think Leroy might not object to as much, then it sounds like a marketing problem. Are we at the point where we have to start talking about alt hip hop? You know, a whole new kind of stream that markets itself.
Well, that's what we're talking about now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, with groups like Sage Francis, for example, or you know, the production stuff of Madlib or MF Doom. I mean, they call it, you know, backpacker rap, but I mean, it's even going further beyond that.
It's grown up rap is what it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. You know, like I said, we're all older now. We need to recognize that hip hop has grown up, and hip hop is really divided in a generation where you got cats like Jazzy Jeff that does not get with the new stuff now. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince, who is now Will Smith, who is all over movies. So don't say that hip-hop is all bad, you know?
Let's go to Raleigh. Ben is on the line. Hi, Ben.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. And I have a quick question for the callers. I would, you had started to bleed into the idea, but I would like for you to talk a little bit about what exactly hip-hop is nowadays. And what we define it, because I feel like it has become more defined as anything that fits into, a black culture or a culture that revolves around rap, where originally, as I growing up with hip-hop, you know, to have a hip-hop show, it wasn't about the rapper. A rapper was just one small part of a crew that would come in with your breakers and your tag artists.
All right.
And you'd have poets. You'd have drummers, you'd have everybody there, and the rapper was one small part.
All right, that's a good question, Ben. Let's get a response. Thanks for calling.
Once again, it's money. Some bright guy when Busy B back in 1981, when it was Cool Herc and Grandmaster Flash and Grandmaster Theodore was on the wax and spinning records, and the MC was only just a small part of it. When the MC picked up a microphone, and Fonte says this all the time, when the MC picked up a microphone and had his back turned to the crowd and started just yelling all type of stuff, and he turned around and everybody had their mouth flung open, and they're like, somebody in that crowd was like, "Oh, this can make some money. Mm-hmm. It's money. They found out rapping makes money."
That was the part of it. Is there an effort to sort of bring that all back together? Is that happening in rap or in hip hop culture?
It's happening amongst the ones who are trying to make a difference. I don't think it's happening that much in, you know, Susie Q record label owner way up in New York City, because she's looking out of a window at Park Avenue. She's not really getting into the streets and find out what's really going on, you know?
Well, let's talk about some other aspects of hip-hop culture. Fashion is another one. You know, urban streetwear, clothing designers like Baby Fat and, you know, designers like that. You guys, for the hip-hop summit in Durham, brought in Kenneth Cole, a designer who, you know, seems to be a little more mainstream, classic fashions. What does that say about the influence of hip-hop on mainstream fashion?
Same thing. We're growing up. We can't wear, you know, fella talking about the baggy clothes. I mean, I get sick when I see
baggy
pants.
Anymore,
you know what I'm saying? I get sick when I see baggy pants, too. Like, I don't like to see a young guy with baggy pants on. It's a situation that we're growing up. You see cats like Fat Joe and Jay-Z wear some of the best suits I've ever seen. 50 Cent wears some great suits. Like, you know, I mean, it's a situation that we're just growing up, man. That's all.
Let's go back to the show, back to the phones. VJ's on the line from Raleigh. Hi, VJ.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm really enjoying the program this afternoon. I just want to reiterate something that was said by the professor a little bit early. And really, it is really about what has happened, particularly with mainstream radio, number one. Number two, you know, it's so easy to criticize the artists, but I never hear anyone criticizing the program directors from the radio station,
yes. Yes.
The music directors from the radio
Call
station.
Call me, man. Please.
I have yet to hear anyone whatsoever criticize Bob Johnson from BET. You know, and we live in this culture, and excuse my language, it's not going to be foul or vulgar, but, you know, where we celebrate the pimp, but we condemn the prostitute,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's what happens. And that was my problem with the whole Cosby thing. Cosby went ahead and he vilified all the artists and the young black kids who are struggling to do something, but not once did he say anything to the major corporate radio station owners. Not once did he say anything referring to Bob Johnson, who's putting out what is the equivalent of electronic crack over the airwaves.
I'm going to have to take that one.
I appreciate that, and I know we can get a response to it. And I first want to say that we're talking to Ninth Wonder and Mark Anthony Neal. I'm Frank Stacio, and this is The State of Things.
You know, this is my thing. Last year, Essence Magazine began the year, you know, talking about this is the year where they're going to take back the music, right? And Essence Magazine, it has an incredible following. Black women and men read the magazine. The same time that they made that announcement, they sold the remaining 51% of their magazine to Time Warner. So the magazine was no longer black owned. It was owned by Time Warner. And as you're sitting down talking about, let's bring in all these artists and hold them responsible, I wondered at what point the folks at Essence were going to walk out of their offices, walk to the elevator, take the elevator up to the top floor, walk into Richard Parsons' office and go, you are as responsible for this as these rappers are. What are you going to do about it? And the conversation never went there. It couldn't go there, right? So what we're left with is, you artists are really bad. And the folks who we need to be holding more accountable, right? And, of course, that takes some work.
Well, it also takes seeing that we're in a relationship, and I think that's what you're saying, that this is all related and a part of the not only the rap industry but entertainment industry in general. Maybe our whole economy suggests that we're all in this alone, that each of us is, you know, here by our own effort, and, you know, this is our responsibility personally. But the fact is, it's a relationship.
It goes back to education of the industry. People actually think that when radio stations still spin records. No, they don't. Only do a mix show. They have playlists. That comes from a higher power. That's why you hear the same five songs every day. But people think that it's actually somebody says, I want to hear this song again and again and again and again. No, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it just goes back to education of it.
I wonder how much of that, though, it gets back to the marketing and this whole idea that there is an international market. There's an international hunger for something. You know, people want music that's a little bit more meaningful. And yet that playlist that you're talking about is based on some kind of marketing research. And I wonder if there's, you know, if there's either a disconnect in the research or if we're not sort of conscious enough of, you know, we answer those questions.
It's a situation where people are getting, it's the tail wagging the dog type of situation. We're not feeding the people what they need to have. If you sit your child down at night, you don't give your child Kit Kat, gummy bears, and all. You're going to give them some broccoli. You're going to give them what you think they need to have that's nutritious. And as people, the program directors and, you know, the people at Radio 1 and all these big corporations, they don't think. They're like, well, we're playing what they want to hear. That's all that you're giving them. That's all that you're pumping them, you know. So pumping to them, so I don't know.
So where are we headed? Where's the industry headed?
It can't continue the way it is. I mean, that's the bottom line. And when you see Kanye's success and when you have folks like Lil Brother or a Common, someone like Jean Grey, as they start pushing the boundaries, at some point folks are going to start listening to this stuff and buying it, and the industry is going to have to respond. I think the power is ultimately in the consumers. When the consumers start to desire and demand something different than what they're getting, to be fed differently, the industry is going to have to respond to that.
At first, they got to find it and hear it and know what they're missing.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Mark Anthony Neal, Associate Professor of Black Pop Culture at Duke University, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Ninth Wonder of Little Brother, thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening to the program. If you have a comment, you can drop us an email at sot@wunc.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.